Hey everybody, this is Dan Young.
And Craig Morrison.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Total Wellness Radio, where every week, Craig and I bring you natural, non-invasive approaches to today's most common health concerns that you can use immediately in your home with you and your family. So, thank you so much again for Craig, this is Dan, for tuning in to Total Wellness Radio. Hey, good day, everybody. Welcome to this week's Wellness Wednesday. We've got an interesting topic that's always a fun debate. It seems to be one of those topics of discussion that families and friends and grandparents and kids love to have, and it never seems to, never seems to go away. The mystique around milk. And I know that we talked last week when we did our insomnia discussion when Craig and I were together. We were talking about certain aspects of diet and nutrition and all the different things that can pop up that people are, you know, curious about and want to know more. And gosh, that's just not the narrative that we hear about in the news and on the commercials and the billboards. And I'll tell you this one. Hey, Janet, thanks for joining. Yeah, my sidekick, I don't know which side he would be on, probably this side. Sidekick's not with me today, but we're gonna go on with the discussion regarding milk. Next week, we're going to actually be on IBS and discuss that. And Sky Davis, Dan the Man. Hey, how you doing, Sky? Thanks for joining us. We'll let the feed kind of populate here a little bit. I'm doing things a little different today. I have some quotes and some information that I want to share regarding this topic and kind of give credit where credit's due. Clearly, this is not research that we have, you know, pioneered or originated when it comes to this particular topic, but it's always one that for great discussion. You know, if you want to bring up the subject of milk and how healthy milk is or isn't for most people, this is always a fun topic to kind of go with. Hey, Rita, thanks for joining us. So I'll just dive in here and share some of the things that we use on a regular basis. I grilled some chicken breast and I'm enjoying my lunch. Hey, good. I had chicken for lunch today too with a nice big salad, lots of water. It was very good, tasty, and no milk. Hey, Leslie, thanks for joining. So I want to share with you a couple of things. I'm just going to quote these because this is, as I said earlier, this is not originally documented or researched information that we provide. I mean, all the research and all the things that you want to know about when it comes to food and the restorative powers and qualities of actual real food in the diet, you go to the IFNH.org, which stands for the International Foundation for Nutrition and Health, and you can find a variety of shared to my feed. Thanks a lot, Sky. I'll get some comments from Wisconsin. You know, you can. There's a lot of information that the turn of the century clinical nutritionists, men and women who dedicated their lives really to uncovering the causes of health. And I know that's kind of backwards. We're used to hearing, well, what causes disease? Well, the problem that we have, and that we live in this country and most of your industrialized countries around the world, is that we don't subject ourselves to figuring out the mainstream medical health disease management system, I should say. They don't spend enough time really exposing us, the general public, and practitioners, medical doctors, to what causes health to occur. And so, you know, for over 20 years, that's been our focus. That's been our, we've paid nothing but attention to what really causes good health. And, you know, you have to know both sides. You have to know how to eat the foods and the food combining and the ratios and things of that nature. And if you're really active versus age versus male, female, there are some subtle differences in establishing a great health, dietary pattern, that type of thing. But we also need to know what will harm you. You also need to know what's going to not contribute to ongoing optimum health in the body. And today's topic is going to really cover on that. We really kind of touched on dairy last week as being the topic, but the focus of this discussion and the material I'm going to share is really centered around, again, this mysterious white nectar of the gods, right, which is milk. And so that's what we're going to talk about. So this flyer, by the way, is one of the documents that we use every month in our Open to the Public class on, it's called Nutrition 101. And this is the one, this is the document that we give to everybody to kind of give them a frame of reference and some things to think about and really explore for themselves, for their kids or their family members, what they've observed with people over the years who insist that drinking milk is just one of the healthiest things you could possibly do for yourself. And so this is produced by a guy by the name of Eric Daniels. He's a wonderful author. He's done a lot of work. This document's well over 25 or 30 years old now. And it's just one of the staples that we provide as a resource for people to read and become knowledgeable on this topic. And I'm just going to read through this, and I may pause at certain points if I have thoughts or comments. By all means, Sky and Leslie, anybody of you out there watching the Facebook Live, if you have comments or things that you'd like to throw in the comments section, by all means, please do so. Here's one now. I tell my daughter to not drink the milk at school. It's poisonous. Yeah, well, this little flyer is a great read for her as well, so that she can understand when we start having certain aspects of illness. In fact, let me start with that from Dr. Jensen. That's a great, thank you for that transition there. This is Chemistry of Man. This is one of the 60 books that Dr. Bernard Jensen, a PhD in nutrition, he was the founder of Iridology, and he also saw over 400,000 clients worldwide on the topics of what causes good health. And this is from one of his books. This is our version here in the clinic. As you can see, this is my copy. It's been used quite extensively over the years. And I wanted to read an excerpt from one of the pages in his book here, just to kind of give you a frame of reference. And this book is this printing was 1983, so that's been a while, right? Been a while since that came out. But I want to just read this excerpt. It says, among the highest paid and busiest men and women in the medical arts are the allergy specialist. Those who deal with hay fever, asthma, bronchitis, catarrhal problems, which is mucus, a lot of excess mucus, okay, and other allergy-related conditions. What are two of the most frequently found allergens? Milk and wheat. These men make their living on wheat-logged, milk-logged people. That's his writing. I just love it. We don't need to rely so much on milk products. There are many other good sources of protein, calcium, and phosphorus around. If we must use milk, it is well to look toward goat's milk rather than cow's milk. And it should be raw milk. That's an interesting comment. Because a lot of people think, oh, but what about the illnesses and the things that can happen? Great question. Bernard Jensen addresses this. Pasteurization may have been justified during the period in history when sanitation was such a threat to health. When tuberculosis and other diseases were passed along by way of diseased milk cows and unsanitary conditions in milking, handling, storing, and distributing milk. But pasteurization kills important enzymes and reduces the nutritional value. In other words, you have just a milk globulin protein that is shrunk in size, it's increased in density, and therefore what it amplifies its allergy properties. And I'll touch back on that a little bit. We also find scientific research indicating that homogenized milk may be one of the contributing causes to atherosclerosis, cardiovascular disease. We will be going more thoroughly into goat's milk later, but in my experience, it is more easily digested and assimilated than cow's milk without generating the heavy catarrh mucus so often produced by cow's milk. We also have seed and nut milk drinks that produce no catarrh whatsoever. Use these as substitutes for milk when heavily laden with catarrh. And that's really kind of his, he's got three or four references in this book where he does reference milk, milk products, some of the other substitutes, and things like that that we need to be aware of. I'm an almond milk fan. I love coconut milk. Not every day, but I do like those as substitutes. And I cannot tell you, I literally cannot bring into my memory the last time that I may have had any kind of milk or milk product to speak of. Even the ice cream on occasion, which is the So Delicious brand, is a coconut base type of ice cream. It's really great tasting. It's very satisfying. No mucus production afterwards. How about yogurts, guy says. Now, yogurt's kind of a little bit different animal. People who are sensitive to milk tend to not do very well with most yogurts as well. But there's three, and I'll give you the names. There are three brands that seem to be the better quality and don't seem to be producing the type of negative mucus and side effects that we see with most brands out there. I can tell you, Danone and Yoplait are never, never on the list of good quality sources. Pretty much packed with sugar, along with the processed dairy. But Altadena Brown Cow and Stonyfield. Altadena Brown Cow or Stonyfield are brands that are produced that have a really good quality culture to them. The way they've been manufactured is a bit less invasive than most of your commercial brands that people are familiar with. And if you're gonna have yogurt, which is good, you're better off making your own. Get Sally Fallon's book, Nourishing Traditions, and make your own. But those are the three that you'd wanna choose from if you're gonna be consuming milk or yogurt. So. Okay, good question. Now, let's talk about Eric Daniel's work for a brief moment. His flyer, Got Milk. Milk, from birth, we were raised to worship milk as nectar from the gods. Women are afraid they will develop osteoporosis without it. Men think without milk, their strength will fade, and parents think milk is needed for their kids to grow. At almost every turn, milk ads scream in your face, buy me. Doctors heartily advocate it, and educators can't seem to recommend it enough. Got Milk. Since the inception of the Got Milk campaign, more and more throats have been gulping down this well-touted white liquid. Milk consumption virtually doubled when that campaign started. So let's get to the point. Is milk really the perfect drink? Isn't it the ultimate drink without which kids can't grow and adults can't stay healthy? Besides, don't you need milk to get calcium for strong bones? Well, sorry to bring you the bad news, but recent studies show something the dairy industry wouldn't want you to know. After endless years of rampant myths about the healthfulness of milk, reverse data and facts are emerging everywhere regarding various studies conducted which suggest milk drinkers actually suffer more symptoms and health problems than those who stay away from this health-giving drink. A Harvard study done on 78,000 women over a 12-year period shows that milk drinkers broke more bones than those who drank it only rarely. Following the study, Dee Bernard, the president of Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, stated, "It is vital to understand that milk is useless against osteoporosis." Let me repeat that, because here's the guy that's the president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and he states, "It is vital to understand that milk is useless against osteoporosis." If you want a good website on this topic, go to strongbones.org, strongbones.org. You'll get a lot of good data there as well. Sky asks, how about cheese? We're going to get to that. If I don't, in the next 20 minutes or so, if I don't get to that, well, in the next 10 or 15, if I don't get to that, remind me to come back to the cheese, but I'll just address it now. White cheeses. Cheese, again, being processed a little bit differently than drinking cow's milk, okay? White cheeses, so provolone, pepper jack, Gouda, Havarti, white cheddar. Swiss tends to be a bit problematic for those who are already showing signs of allergy sensitivities to dairy. So keep the Swiss out of there. The Colbys, the ones that have the mixed yellow and white, are ones that you really want to avoid as much as possible. But your pepper jack, Gouda, Havarti, white cheddar on small amounts, okay, these tend to not be nearly as problematic. And again, this is about the milk process to homogenize pasteurized milk and what it's doing with people as well. It was observed that countries known for their high dairy intake also had a higher incidence of osteoporosis. While there is the probability milk may be a contributing factor to osteoporosis, we can at least safely ascertain that it surely doesn't remedy the situation. So much for the theory of milk and strong bones. A better question will be, why are we told all this tapestry of fairy tales? Better yet, we can ask, who is behind all these healthy facts? Is there any commercial connection that I didn't think of? I think he's being a little sarcastic here. And he goes on to kind of give his own disclaimer. Don't want to be the judge. I better make it clear from the outset, I have no intention of appointing myself a judge to assert whether it's natural or not, logical or not, to consume animal products, whether it be meat, dairy, or otherwise. This I leave to you, the readers, and you can email him for your feedback or send me the comment, and I can forward it on to Eric Daniels. Many will argue, or my only concern in this report is the facts, the numbers, the actual real numbers. Many will argue man was never meant to consume cow's milk, that it was made for calves. Yeah, I think so. I decided to take no side in the issue. Nowadays, we have to rise above theories alone and seek the facts. This theory suggests that the human body was never meant to or intended to digest animal products. While sensible in logic, this theory failed the test. Direct experience with hundreds of people showed me clearly that many people do better on animal products, such as meat. Yes, quite a few do better without it, but it is a personal issue and not a hard and fast rule. Three close associates of mine did much worse as vegetarians for years, so it must be a personal issue. So what about milk? Let's not keep the cows waiting. Bad for kids. Here's an interesting study. We'll start with the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. They report that cow's milk is the most common allergy among children. The IOMD, a California-based clinic led by Dr. Van Benchiton, consider the elimination of dairy from one's diet as the most important dietary change that one can make. They report on how their patients would often get antibiotic toxicity from dairy products, and that even a single piece of cheese was found to trigger bacterial infections and immune system injury. So there again, careful about the cheese. They found that antibiotics, residues, and pesticides in dairy contribute to sinusitis, ear infection, asthma, bloating, menstrual problems, heart disease, and diabetes. Their clinical experience suggested that dairy products trigger damage to the lungs, heart, and pancreas. The symptoms linked with its consumption were allergies, arthritis, childhood anemia, chronic ear infections. I see that a lot clinically. I'm sure Sky does too. Colic, diabetes, hyperactivity, osteoporosis, vitamin D toxicity, pesticide poisoning, ovarian cancer, infertility. The list goes on. The ads say milk does the body good. Does it really? IOMD specifically instructed all of their patients to be off dairy. So modern day processing, modern day homogenizing, modern day pasteurization, although at time in our history it was needed because of the, as I mentioned earlier, the sanitation problems, the storing issues that we had many, many years ago, generations back, okay? Yes, those are contributing factors that pasteurization and homogenization help to alleviate. But the process of destroying the enzymes, of mutating the actual protein found in milk, and then introducing that processed dead substance to the human body, which, by the way, it is, you know, produced for calves, not humans, is where we get some real problems taking place. All right, where did I leave off here? Washington, D.C. pediatrician Russell Benet also considers that elimination of dairy products will produce the greatest health benefits as a dietary change. For over two decades, Benet followed the effects of dairy products on children and their families and noticed certain diseases were prevalent in areas where milk consumption was high as compared with areas which were free of its consumption. So there's some more information. In the high dairy areas, asthma and allergic reactions were common. Arthritis, he said, seemed to be linked as well. Milk appears to be harmful, especially for babies and kids. Chief of Pediatrics at Johns Hopkins Hospital cites evidence that at least 50% of all children in the United States are allergic to milk. Study conducted in 1976 showed that a single dose of cow milk could destroy the normal function of the stomach for several weeks to months in susceptible children. When you are not aware of the cause of such ill symptoms and keep consuming milk, you may be potentially ending up with a chronic problem no doctor can identify and thus fail to handle. The study suggested that kids in general can't handle milk. Pasteurized milk is what we're talking about. It is important to note that the ordinary milk, the milk that everybody drinks, the one we all buy in our grocery stores and various supermarkets, is pasteurized. This article and all the studies conducted refer specifically to pasteurized milk. Many years ago, I had a man in my Nutrition 101 class sitting in the back who was a dairy farmer. I didn't know this. And when I started bashing milk, he felt like maybe I was hitting on milk kind of hard. He spoke up and drew my attention to the fact that, well, now I have raw milk. And I said, I thank you for clarifying. We're talking about pasteurized milk here. And Sky makes a good point. How about organic Organic Valley? I guess that's a milk source, okay? Here's the problem. It's still been pasteurized. And whether you pasteurize it at 140 or flash pasteurize it at 240, you are still converting what at one time, the way nature presented it to us, was a very healthy food. Once man has tampered with it with the pasteurization, you now have basically a dead, lifeless food. And the other thing, and I'll draw a little picture of this, the other thing that happens and why these become so antigen to the body in terms of an allergy is in this little illustration. When you see that big one on this side of the picture, that's a milk globulin prior to pasteurization and heat. There it is after. So what happens is that this protein shrinks in size drastically and becomes heavier in density. It becomes heavier in weight. So the smaller this little molecule of milk becomes, the protein, it's easier, much easier, for that piece of protein to get into the bloodstream before it's been processed. And that's what triggers in kids and adults in this type 1 diabetes that runs rampant. That's an autoimmune situation. The body's producing autoantibodies against a specific protein in the body. And when those proteins lodge in the pancreas or in the muscle or in the liver or the spleen or the lung, right, or the adrenal glands, when that protein is lodged in these different tissues where it doesn't belong, the body becomes confused, produces antibodies, starts attacking this area, and that's how you get most all of your autoimmune challenges that the CDC talks about will have some form of an allergy component that's triggering that, that's setting that person's immune system up for overaggression, for rapid responses to these foreign proteins. So, all right, harmful for everybody. Here's the conclusion as we wrap this up. I have contacted several doctors in the LA area. They all suggested tolerances vary from individual to individual. They vary, okay. Dr. Hensel from the Shaw Health Center finds fairly high accuracy in the blood type diet or theory. And, you know, blood types O and A, this will cover most of American population. Dr. Cindy Clayton found from her experience that up to 30% of her visitors may handle milk safely. So that's 3 out of 10, which leaves, in her clinical experience, about a 70% variant of people who really do not tolerate milk well. So the joints, the breathing, the sinusitis, the ear issues, the swelling in the glands. You show me kids who've had to have their tonsils removed at a young age, and I'll show you somebody who probably was consuming milk at an early age and created kind of an autoimmune issue because the tonsils and the adenoids are part of the immune system response from a gland perspective. And so these things are what we have to avoid. We have to convince people, you know, their ill health should be enough to convince them. But when I see someone that's really consuming a lot of dairy products, that's one of the first things that we really try to eliminate, you know, 70, 80% of whatever their consumption is and drop it. Noticeably, they start seeing things with like the sinuses, breathing, you know, their stamina, hormonal, digestion. A lot of these things are influenced in a positive way from within the first week or two of them avoiding those types of foods. So this is one of those topics that we could go on and discuss in greater detail, I'm sure. Let's see, they agree with the blood type diet. Yeah, the blood type, that according to Eric Daniels, guy, from what he has seen in his in interviews with physicians, let me find it here again for you. Yeah, the Shaw Health Clinic finds fairly high accuracy in the blood type diet theory, asserting that general, as opposed to all-inclusive, intolerance of dairy products by most blood types O and A. They tend to have an intolerance for the dairy products. This is going to cover most of the American population. So again, another gal, Dr. Clayton, found that about 3 out of 10 of her clients were the only could have a little bit of dairy on occasion. So that's kind of just that. And again, that just skims the surface. I definitely would tell you to go to the International Foundation for Nutrition and Health and look up their information on whole foods and superfoods. Look up their flyer on milk. Real Food, I think, is the name of the brochure. And they really make the distinction between the effects, the negative effects, that our bodies have towards pasteurized milk versus raw milk. And you got to remember, raw milk, now we have testing procedures for cows who aren't carrying certain bacteria. It's called Bangs testing. That's what the vets are doing with cows that are producing foods for human consumption. It's called Bangs testing. And when they pass a Bangs test, then clearly they're not carrying something that's going to be detrimental to the consumption by the person. And then now we have to make sure that in terms of collection, sanitized collection and storage, which are the two areas that pasteurization, because those were bad many years ago, pasteurization helps to correct that a little bit. But today, our sanitation, the collection of that product, the storage of that product is much, much better. And as long as the cows have been Bangs tested and pass that test, we're okay. So to use that. But I would definitely find goat milk. It's much less mucus forming. Babies thrive on it. If mom can't produce and is sensitive to the formulas, the baby is, goat's milk is really the best way to go. So, which is most of the population? That makes sense. Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you all for joining in. It's 1:29. I have to be in an exam room at 1:30. So I'll wrap up by saying this. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. We appreciate you. Be sure and post your comments or questions in today's Wellness Wednesday Live. We'll address those throughout the day and the rest of the week. And so next week, the 27th of September, is the Nutrition 101 class. We do that here the fourth Tuesday of every month, 6:15 p.m. Anybody here in the Cheyenne area or the region wants to come and attend. That is a public education workshop or class. It's complimentary. There is no fee for anybody to attend that class. And so you're certainly welcome to join us there. And on the 28th, our next Wellness Wednesday will be the discussion of IBS. Nothing but a lot of symptoms. And we've got some really important things to share on the concerns people have with IBS, which can be debilitating. So thank you again, as always, for tuning in. Take care, be blessed, have a wonderful rest of your week.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Total Wellness Radio. Thanks again for tuning in. And for more information, be sure and catch us on Facebook Live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Mountain Time at the Country Doctor Nutritional Center Facebook page. Until next time, thank you so much for tuning in.